Thanks for joining us. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane Rehm. She's going to be back tomorrow. The Scientific Committee of the International Whaling Commission is meeting in Hawaii later this week in advance of the IWC's annual meeting in mid-June. The organization is considering a proposal to allow limited commercial whaling over the next decade with quotas. Joining us in the studio to discuss what this may mean to the 1986 moratorium on whaling, Fred O'Regan of the International Fund for Animal Welfare and Chris Palmer. He's the author of Shooting in the Wild. Joining us from the NRK studio in Oslo, Norway, is Karsten Klepsvik, the Norwegian commissioner to the IWC. But first, on the phone with us is Monica Medina. She is the U.S. commissioner for the International Whaling Commission and the Commerce Department's principal deputy undersecretary at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Welcome to you all. Thanks for joining us on the Diane Rehm Show. You can join our conversation, drshow at wamu.org is our email address, 1-800-433-8850 is our phone number. Monica Medina, let's start with a basic question. Commercial whaling has been banned since 1986. Why is this still a problem? Why are we talking about it all these years later?
Well, good morning, Stephen. Thank you for having this show. It's a good time to be talking about these issues. We are working on a proposal now because the commercial whaling moratorium, while it was incredibly successful at the outset when it first came into effect in 1986, it brought down the amount of whaling going on dramatically and brought it under down to numbers that were much lower. Unfortunately, we're still talking about it because the moratorium isn't, in fact, a moratorium. It is the case that certain governments, I believe you have a representative of one of them on the phone this morning or on the line.
Japan, Norway, and Iceland.
Yes. Japan, Norway, and Iceland have managed to continue to whale under various exceptions and provisions of the original treaty. So Japan whales under a scientific whaling exception, and they've taken up to 1,000 whales in the last few years a year. They've killed 1,000 a year in hunts in both the Southern Ocean and the North Pacific. And Norway has taken approximately 500 a year, and Iceland has now reinstituted a commercial whaling program and took about 200 last year. So, unfortunately, the moratorium hasn't been as effective in recent years as it had been originally. So we are concerned by the growing trend of whaling. There's also a trend potentially toward international trade. Iceland would like to trade whale meat with Japan, and that is also an issue. And We are working on a proposal to try and bring all whaling under control of the IWC.
Well, now, the proposal that is being floated and will be discussed later this month is a complex one and a controversial one. Give us the basic outline of what would happen, what would change from current regulation.
Yes. I want to be clear, too. I know that a lot of people are looking at this proposal. It was put on the table by the chair and the vice chair of the commission, and the U.S. government does not support it yet. We are working in the diplomatic process to try and obtain additional changes to the proposal that would make it acceptable to us. But let me describe quickly what it does, at least so far. The commercial moratorium would be retained. I know a lot of discussion has been had about whether or not the moratorium is in fact retained, and it is. It remains in the appendix that that is the operative legal part of the convention. But it would be given real teeth because the loopholes would be closed and sanctions would be applied for infractions of the amount of whales being killed. So the whaling governments would be agreeing to reduce the amount of whaling that they're doing under the current provisions of the agreement that allow them to whale, and they would be accountable for that. So it would cap whaling at significantly reduced levels. So many, many fewer, thousands fewer whales will be killed over the course of the agreement. It would also prevent any new countries from engaging in whaling under these exceptions and provisions that allow whaling to go on now. It would eliminate whaling on several species that are currently being whaled. It would focus the IWC on conservation by renewing a commitment to conservation by all governments within the IWC. It would increase the participation rights of civil society. It would bring in rigorous monitoring, reporting, enforcement, and oversight to prevent the kind of illegal whaling that we've seen even in recent weeks with the finding that there was whale meat being sold in a sushi restaurant in Los Angeles. We think that's sort of the tip of the iceberg, that there may be a lot more illegal whale meat that is being sold in the market, and we could get a better handle on that.
Well, let me...
It would also establish a South Atlantic whale sanctuary. So another huge part of the ocean would be a place where whales could be conserved.
Well, now, you sound very favorable in your description, but you then say the United States has not signed on to this. Why not?
We have not signed on to it because I think we would like to see greater reductions in the number of whales that would be hunted under this proposal. As you know, the chair put out a proposal with a table that included that includes caps, and we think the caps need to be lower, that there need to be some reductions, and we are working hard to get those. We also believe there needs to be a provision that requires that whale meat be used only for domestic purposes, not traded. So we have lots of other smaller issues that we're working through, but the main ones are wanting to see even greater reduction than is represented in the chair's proposal.
Let me ask you one other question, and I know you have to go. A lot of skeptics would say, hey, we've had these provisions in place since 1986. People have gotten around them. All of the provisions you're talking about would be written on paper. What guarantees do we have that that actually be enforced? And can they really be enforced? And will people obey them? There's a lot of skepticism, as you know.
I do understand the skepticism, and I think that's understandable. I think that the provisions in the agreement are intended to bring whaling under the control of the IWC. Right now, the IWC only controls or regulates 15% of the whaling that happens, and that's whaling that's for indigenous peoples who subsist on whales. It would be far better to have the IWC providing oversight with meaningful sanctions, and there would be a committee set up to actually impose those sanctions. And this would operate more like a typical fishery management organization that doesn't tolerate the kind of overages and self-regulation that we have right now. Right now what we have is the whaling governments regulating themselves, setting their own quotas and deciding whether or not to how to whale and when to whale. And this agreement would bring into place an awful lot more oversight, including a DNA registry.
As you mentioned, we have a representative of Norway, one of the three whaling nations. Karsten Klepsvik has been nice enough to join us. He's the Norwegian commissioner of the IWC. And, Commissioner, the first question I have for you is, why is Norway one of only three nations that has not signed on to the 86 agreement?
We have reserved our position regarding the moratorium that was decided upon back in 1982 for one simple reason, namely that to install a moratorium according to the whaling convention, such a moratorium must be based on scientific facts and a scientific advice. This was not the case back then. And accordingly, Norway used its right to reserve its position, which is entitled within the convention text. And this decision is therefore not binding upon Norway. But we only have a very limited whaling on one whale species, namely the minke whale. So, and this stock is in a very good condition. And based on scientific advice, we have a limited quota on the stock as of today.
Of course, a lot of folks disagree with your point that there's no scientific evidence that whales are being endangered. What's the basis for your viewpoint that that there's no scientific basis for a moratorium?
Well, the science, as far as we know it today, tells you several things. Point one, no whale species have been brought to extinction. Two, all whale species today are either stabilized or increasing. In fact, most of them are increasing in size. And three, the limited whaling we have on a few species is very cautious, and it's definitely doing no harm to the species in question. Regarding the minke whale that we are catching, this stock is in fact increasing rapidly and is in a very good condition. The limited outtake we take today does no harm to the stock whatsoever.
And what's Norway's position on this draft agreement? Are you finding that will Norway sign on or not?
That remains to be seen. We are not optimistic at all with regards to the possibility of reaching an agreement. Quite simply, because all indications we have is that those who are against whaling are not prepared to accept the modalities within the draft consensus as it stands today. So it remains to be seen whether we can reach a consensus. My reading as of today is that this will highly, most likely not be possible.
Thank you very much. I want to say goodbye to Monica Medina, the U.S. Commissioner for the International Whaling Commission. Thanks so much, Ms. Medina, for joining us on the Diane Rehm Show. I'll be back with more of your calls, more of your comments on the issue of international whaling, so stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane, and our subject this hour is international whaling, with a major meeting coming up in mid-June to discuss a draft proposal that's been put on the table about trying to change the rules regarding international whaling. And Karsten Klepsvik, who is the Norwegian commissioner on whaling issues, is with me on the phone from Norway. Also here in the studio, Fred O'Regan of the International Fund for Animal Welfare, Chris Palmer, author of Shooting in the Wild. And let me ask you, Fred, you've heard Monica Medina from the U.S. Outline what's in this draft proposal. You've heard Karsten Klepsvik say Norway probably is not going to sign on. What's your take on where we stand in this ongoing international debate?
Thanks. Well, as Monica had said, the deal is still, you know, under discussion. There is a draft paper that's put out by the chair. I'd be less than frank if I didn't say there's enormous concern in the civil sector about this deal, that in fact, when you really look at what's on paper versus what the proponents, starting with the United States, say about it, it looks quite different. For example, what this deal would do would be to, first of all, break the moratorium. You can't have a moratorium with three nations having a quota set for them. It's just a contradiction in terms. That would reverse 30 years of U.S. leadership on moratorium and on the whaling. It would allow whaling in a sanctuary, the Southern Ocean Sanctuary. It would reward three countries that have flouted.
She said that they would preserve the sanctuary.
She was talking about the Atlantic.
Okay.
There's a South Atlantic sanctuary, which is the creation of which is on the board, but it's somewhat meaningless because no one whales in the Southern Atlantic anyway. It's the southern Antarctic whaling in the Pacific that's hard. Again, the precedents here, the sort of, I guess, the moral hazard of rewarding the three nations with quotas who have flouted the moratorium or disregarded it for the last 30 years, sets an awful precedent. It disregards independent scientific review. The scientific committee of the IWC has not been party to reviewing the numbers that are in this agreement. The agreements so far have been done behind closed doors, led by the United States over the last 2 to 3 years. Four of the five secret meetings, so to speak, which have been closed to civil society and to the press, have been on U.S. soil. As we speak, I don't know why, frankly, the administration continues to say it's not pushing this deal when just last week, two officials from nowhere in Europe lobbying the permanent representatives to the EU. In April, there was a quote from the U.S. criticizing the British government for not getting on board with this. So, lastly, it undermines the IWC because this deal, so to speak, on paper, would, in fact, override the main schedule, the body of legal and policy work that is in it. Again, the science is put aside. There'd be a 10-year block quota, essentially. It does not reduce whaling. It does not reduce it. It basically keeps it the same. It's technical to get into, but in a nutshell, they're confusing quotas with catch limits. The catches are different.
But let me ask Chris Palmer. It sounds like the proponents of whaling, represented by Commissioner Klepsiewicz, who is very skeptical. Here we have Fred, from the environmental point of view, very skeptical. Is this a classic case of people trying to find a middle ground, being attacked from both sides?
Well, I think, Steve, that the 1986 moratorium on commercial whaling was one of the environmental movement's greatest accomplishments. And I agree with Fred, to now try to overturn it and legalize whaling is, I think, to be on the wrong side of history. I've swum with humpback whales off Hawaii while making an IMAX film with Roger Payne on whales. And to see a mother, which is a mother humpback the size of six elephants, see a mother and a calf closely bonded in the water, is to realize that they are sentient animals that have emotions and feelings like we do. They're warm-blooded, extremely social, highly intelligent, amazing communicators, able to feel intense emotion. They are our closest counterparts to in the sea, an incredible marvels of evolution. To kill them for a luxury food item, I think, is egregiously offensive. You know, I think the Obama administration, I know Monica is doing the best job she can, but I think the Obama administration needs to fight harder to stop the slaughter of whales. As Fred just indicated, this new plan is not going to change the numbers, despite what the claim made. And we should be pressing for sanctions against countries that kill these extraordinary and stunningly beautiful animals. And Steve, don't forget that I want to remind people that whales remain under threat and are highly stressed, not just by commercial whaling, but by oil spills, noise, ship strikes, pollution, climate change, toxics, entanglement in fishing nets. They are already under stress.
Now, Commissioner Klepsiewicz said that the science is that the whale stocks are improving and that there is no concern for of the kind you're talking about. How would you answer
that? Well, I disagree. I mean, these are slowly breeding animals. Fin whales, adult males, take 6 to 10 years to reach sexual maturity. Calves are born every 3 to 4 years. They breed slowly. The numbers of whales are far below what they were historically. They are a small percentage of original population levels. The science shows that the numbers of whales are far lower than they should be, and we need to conserve and protect them, not be hunting them for luxury food items.
Let me bring in Karsten Klepsiewicz on this. You heard that the two panelists say that they disagree with your view, that the science shows that the whale stocks are healthy, and they say that this is a luxury food item. Why would Norway continue to sanction this hunt? Why is it so important to your country?
Well, let's take the point on science first. Of course, we agree that the stocks are below where they were at historical levels, which means pre-hunting levels. My point is that from the point where they were quite depleted, they are now recovering. Some of them, in fact, substantially. Even the blue whales are now recovering at quite a good rate. So there is no problem of any whales becoming extinct. All whale stocks in the world are increasing. That's a fact, and I think we should agree on that, because we I'm not talking about prehistorical levels, but they are increasing. Some stocks are in fact already at very high levels, for instance the North Atlantic minke whale stock. When it comes to talking about this as a luxury food item, I don't know where they take that from. In Norway, this is a staple that you can buy in stores, and it's bought by normal Norwegians with a normal salary, and it's definitely not a luxury food item. We do not see any difference between whale and hunting whale compared to big game hunting or eating cow meat or meat from sheep, etc., etc. I, of course, respect that some people think that we should stop eating meat, and we can, of course, argue that, but we do not agree on that
point. Well, how can you say that there's no difference when sheep, of course, are a domesticated animal that are raised specifically for this purpose, and without getting into the question of the ethics of eating meat, I think our guests are saying that why kill whales when you can certainly satisfy any dietary interest with domestic production of a variety of other fish and animals? Why is this essential?
This comes down to ethics, and it seems as if Chris argues that the whales have a kind of higher ethical value than other animals. For us, that's not the case. We sheep, for instance, are extremely social. If you have seen sheep, how they relate to human beings, how they relate between themselves, I mean, they're fantastic animals. And I do not believe that whales have any higher intelligence than most other animals. I do not see any reason why whales should be taken out from the ecosystem as one species that should be put at a higher level than other species on Earth. So we totally disagree on that, and that's the basis for Norway as a big natural resources nation, for utilization of the resources we have in a sustainable, scientifically based manner, and where we also make sure that we have humane methods of killing these animals. And that goes for all animals, absolutely every animals, also for animals domesticated, as you say, grown up in factories, whatever it is. I mean, the humane aspects of this is just as important there as anywhere else.
Fred, would you like to answer the question?
Just to make a couple of points here. One, when you hear the term sustainable whaling, you need to really pay attention, because the basis right now that we depleted whales by over 90% of their numbers from two centuries ago. So when you look at what the baseline is today, it is so severely depleted that one really has to wonder what we mean by sustainable. Second, I thankfully most countries in the world don't think the way Norway does. We'd really be in problems here. A sheep is not blasted with an anti-tank round that explodes within it and still can take up to 45 minutes to die. There is a big difference between whales and domesticated slaughterhouses, to be sure. I'd say thirdly that while the minister talks about sustainability and science, Norway has never allowed the independent scientific committee of the IWC to review its numbers or its and from an independent point of view maintain that there is sustainability among the minkes that they're talking about.
I have to take this last part is quite simply wrong. Norway present all the science on the minke whale stocks of the North Atlantic to the scientific committee, and the scientific committee has gone through the numbers. It's based on a model developed by the scientific committee, and the outcome is in a way sanctioned by the scientific committee. So there is no disagreement within the scientific committee that the Norwegian whale hunt for minke whales are sustainable. It's can be fully justified, and it follows, in fact, the principles established by the scientific committee.
Chris?
I just want to make the point that there has to be some boundary for people's greed, for our greed and hubris, this attitude that we can exploit natural resources without limit. The three rogue whaling countries, Norway, Iceland, Japan, are being allowed to continue whaling with no guarantees that they will eventually stop. The administration, in my view, should be lobbying for tightening the moratorium, not weakening it. These three countries have long exploited loopholes in the 1986 treaty to conserve whales, and all the evidence points to these whaling countries continuing such tactics.
I'm Steve Roberts, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Let's turn to Dr. Roger Payne, has been nice enough to call us. I know you don't have a lot of time, Dr. Payne, so welcome to The Diane Rehm Show, and what's on your mind?
Thank you.
Please go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, thanks. I just wanted to say I think I've spent many, many years in the International Whaling Commission. I'm interested particularly in the comments of the Norwegian commissioner. He is showing his deep respect for science. It's very interesting that the numbers which are proposed under this current agreement are not based on science at all. They're based upon politics. They're not supported or have not been reviewed by the scientific committee. So I think it's inexcusable to consider that they have any value at all, except they're really what the whalers would like to kill. I think that Fred Reagan had it dead right, that what this really will do is set us back to, I would say, all the way back to the 1940s, when that was when the International Whaling Commission first began. There is, at this present time, no control whatever by the rest of the world. The rest of the world doesn't even get a look in on fixing quotas. And the whalers can not only adjust things the way they like, if they use this wonderful scam called scientific whaling, they can claim that in order to do science, they have to be able to, or they could say, you know, we want to kill this species in this place where it's now forbidden, by this means where it's now forbidden. They can go into areas where factory ships have been excluded. It's an outrageous situation. It shouldn't be done.
Dr. Payne, if I'm not mistaken, you were the one who discovered the whale songs among the humpback whales.
Yes, that's right.
And is part of what, you know, Commissioner Klepsvik was saying, that somehow whales have attained almost a cultural status, a mythological status that separates them from other animals. And the Norwegian view is they should not be separated. I'm interested in your take, given your work with whales as a cultural and not just as a biological phenomenon, your take on that question. Are whales, should we think of whales differently? Do we think of whales differently?
Well, I don't think anybody has sold whale records of sheep songs, as far as I know. And I would say that the important thing is that the perception of many peoples, not just the Norwegians, obviously, but many other peoples, is that they are different. Perceptions are important. What control things like religion, for example. And my feeling is that has importance. It's not something you can ignore. I very much like Chris Palmer's comment that it was that the creation of a moratorium, and by the way, it wasn't a moratorium, it was a zero quota, but anyway, a creation of this zero quota was, in fact, one of the most important things that ever was achieved. To then kick it over on some, I would say, rather flawed and incomplete basis, as is now being proposed, I think would be mischief.
Thank you very much for your call. We appreciate it, Dr. Payne.
Thank you.
Fred, what is your take on this question of sort of the debate? Here's Dr. Payne saying whales are a very special species, not only because of the biology that Chris was talking about, the very slow breeding, but also they have a special place in our culture, whether it's the songs of the whales, whether it's Moby Dick. I mean, they are creatures that have threaded their way through our culture. And Commissioner Klepsvik said, you know, they're really no different from sheep. What's your take?
Well, I think, again, I go back to the point that we destroyed 90% of the existing whale populations around the world through our commercial whaling. So, I mean, at the state that they're at, sure, are they special? Absolutely. I mean, we could go on for days and days about the majesty of these animals, how intelligent they are, the fact that they can swim tens of thousands of miles in their lifetimes. They are exceedingly sentient. They have language and dialects. They have a very strong subcultures and organizational, very, very complex social organization, they're not fish. I mean, they're certainly, and that's one of the problems is that historically we've treated them like fish. And I think that there needs to be, I think, and I think that Chris has been getting at that. I'll make one point. Whaling is an incredibly archaic, it's an archaic viewpoint that things are there to be exploited. And unless you're depleting them severely, then you just keep on exploiting it.
There's another point, though, quickly, too, and that we see this in Japan, which is this question of national sovereignty, this question of whether we eat whale meat or not, we should have that right. I mean, there's also that issue at stake here, too.
Well, I think whales don't belong to any nation. They're highly migratory animals. I mean, the Japanese are going to the Southern Oceans, to the Antarctic, to get them. But I think that a key point here is that in this deal that's being done, what this would allow is essentially a 10-year block. And that's a dangerous thing. With all the other threats that there are to whales today, most people think it's just too dangerous to go back to commercial whaling.
That's Fred O'Regan from the International Fund for Animal Welfare. I'll be back with your comments, your phone calls, in just a minute. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in for Diane. Stay with us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works at education. Learn more at edutopia.org. By the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. By the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And by Intel Corporation, in recognition of NPR's ongoing commitment to science and technology coverage. This is NPR.
I don't think Bauer's just looking to expose the Russians' involvement in the plot against his son. This guy's out for blood.
Time has run out for Jack Bauer, the hero of Fox TV's 24. Monday is the final episode. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with the show's executive producer, Howard Gordon. Join us.
Welcome back. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane. Our subject this week, this hour, is international whaling, an issue that will come up before the International Whaling Commission meeting next month. I have three experts with me, Fred O'Regan of the International Fund for Animal Welfare, Chris Palmer, author of Shooting in the Wild, and joining us from Norway is Karsten Klepsvik. He is the Norwegian commissioner to the IWC, Norway being one of three countries that do engage still in commercial whaling. Let me read you some emails. This is our first comment is from Facebook. Tony writes to us, why can't the IWC strengthen the ban to exclude all whaling, including the scientific whaling that the Japanese exploit to hunt over 1,000 whales per year as a commercial enterprise? Chris, the IWC is a voluntary organization, and there's no mechanism for forcing people, right?
No, that's true, but Tony has it exactly right. We need to end commercial whaling as soon as possible. Japan, Iceland, and Norway have repeatedly found ways to evade the 1986 moratorium, or as Roger just said, zero quota on whaling. And these countries, I'm sorry to say it, but they can't be trusted to keep any promises they make about reducing whale kills. They have a culture in which the brutal and barbaric killing of whales to provide high-priced food is sanctioned and accepted. There's no guarantee that after 10 years they will stop hunting. They might well continue unlimited whaling once the 10-year period is up. So Tony has a good point, and I would urge him and other people to write to the president to urge him to keep his campaign promise to protect whales, and to write to the Japanese embassy here in D.C. and tell them that you will not buy any Japanese products or visit Japan unless they stop killing dolphins and whales.
Let me read this email from Susan in Eastern Massachusetts. Just what sanctions do they feel would actually work in a viable, realistic way at a time when in the past nothing seems to stop countries from illegal hunting? This is one of the questions I've already raised. Given this international environment, how do you answer, Susan?
There's what's called the Pelley Amendment that does allow for sanctions. It's a political issue. That's really what it comes down to, is the United States and other like-minded countries willing to really enforce. And the problem has been that Japan, Japan has distorted an international treaty organization here. They've been engaged in vote buying for years, taking small island nations and tying it to their fisheries aid to make sure that they that's why they have the number of votes that they do. It's not three countries. It's 30 or so that vote with them. I think so they're being rewarded by essentially having a really planned and orchestrated confrontation against the very nature of the IWC itself. So I think that's a problem. But I think what it comes back to is, why is the Obama administration allowing this to go forward? We keep asking ourselves, why at this point in time you have this?
Well, they argue that this would have the effect of reducing. They say this is a real world compromise, that the net result. We heard Monica Medina say that the net result would be to reduce, not to zero, but to reduce the catch. And critics of this have to answer their argument.
Let me quote Dr. Sidney Holt, who's essentially, along with Roger Payne, one of the greatest whale biologists of the century. He's often called the father of marine population biology, who wrote the first book in the 1950s. He calls this proposal a scam. He said it will not, in fact, it is not a conservation measure. It's exactly the opposite, for the reasons I gave before, that the numbers don't add up. There will be no reduction in takes of this at this time, essentially. There were 17,000 whales killed in the last 10 years. There'll be 17,000 killed in the next 10 years, at the end of which there is no phasing out. There's no agreement of anything at the end of 10 years. The Japanese commissioner was quoted as saying, quote, at the end of 10 years, you have a blank piece of paper.
But you've just made the point that under the current regulation, this is continued. The people who propose this say that's our point, that the current regime does not work, and therefore we have to try a different regime to reduce the kill. But you have just said that the kill remains high.
It relatively high, but don't forget, the first year the moratorium went in, as Sylvia Earle, another great scientist, had said, the moratorium has saved many more whales than this deal will ever do. I mean, it's saved tens of thousands of whales by reducing it, by getting countries out of it altogether. Japan has been allowed to exploit this loophole, and everybody knows it's wrong. And what they've done is they've built up this essentially moral hazard to a point now where Japan's winning. Why shouldn't they? Why not? Nobody's doing anything. So now they're getting the IWC to essentially sanction their own whaling and give them the quotas that they want. It's ridiculous.
Commissioner Klepsvik, you see our panelists with the strong emotions they feel, and they represent a lot of our callers, a lot of our listeners who have emailed us and want to talk. Norway has taken a lot of international heat and a lot of international pressure. Even the other Scandinavian countries have not joined us with you. Why is it worth it to Norway to continue to hold to this position in the face of such strong international outcry?
Well, first of all, we, of course, respect that people disagree with us. Secondly, the pressure on Norway has not been that big at all. We can, in fact, easily live with this also in the future if it stays as it is.
But why is it worth it to you?
Yes, the point is that I've tried to raise this before. First of all, I think we should try to stick to facts, which is not the case here. There are a lot of misunderstandings and a lot of wrong statements here. But we, as a big natural resource nation, find it of the biggest importance that we can utilize these resources in a sustainable way. That goes for oil, it goes for gas, it goes for fisheries, it goes for forests, etc., etc. These are renewable resources. And if we don't take out more from a stock, then this this can still either continue to increase or it will be stabilized at a healthy level, then we see no justification for stopping these kind of activities. Of course, they shall be done in a humane way, but we cannot see any scientific justification for why whales shall be treated different from other animals. We believe we should show the same respect for all animals. We believe we shall have a strict management regime for whaling as we do have for fisheries, and we shall be able to justify what we are doing at any given time. And also, we should keep in mind that what we are talking about here is a very, very limited number of whales being caught every year. You're trying not to portray this as a huge catch with thousands and thousands of animals being caught and that this catch is increasing. Nothing is correct. The catch is in fact decreasing. It has never been lower than this for the last 100 years probably. And no one is asking for an increase in catches. Japan is willing to substantially reduce their catch. Iceland is suggesting to have a very limited catch on two species. Norway has de facto decreased its catch over the last few years. So trying to portray this as a huge race where we are now trying to destroy the whales of the world is simply not correct. I think we should stick to facts and try to keep this as rational as possible.
Thank you very much. Let me turn to Fiona. You're on the Diane Rehm Show from Whitehall, Michigan. Thank you.
Well, hi. Thank you very much for taking my call. The topic of today's show resonates profoundly with me, and I thank Chris and Fred for their eloquence in speaking out about the issue, and they've covered many of the topics that I was going to speak on myself. I'm concerned with the gestation period of the length that it takes for a fetus, whale fetus, to grow. I'm concerned about the violent death. There have been no improvements with regard to the means by which the whales die. And with respect to accountability, I have huge doubts about that, and I don't understand how they can extrapolate numbers on the population of whales. And I question if a whaling vessel is approaching a pod of whales from afar, what do they do to determine whether it's a minke whale or not? If it's another whale breed, do they shoot regardless? I would question whether they just stick to the whale species that they say they do. At this point, I'm doing all I can to get the word out. I have watched The Cove. I have purchased a copy so that I can offer it to all that would be willing to watch it. I know it's an inconvenient truth for many to view it. I have been forwarding information from several environmental organizations that I am a member of. I have been writing letters to President Obama. No response. I've written letters to the Japanese embassy. At this point, what do we do with the time we have left? What is the most effective way to get this information out with the time that we have left?
Okay, thank you, Fiona.
Steve, could I come in on this? There were two questions there and two statements that are not correct. When it comes to time to death, the violent death, in Norwegian whaling, I'm only speaking for Norwegian whaling, almost 90% of the animals dies instantaneously. The rest dies within less than 2 minutes. So this, you can compare this with whatever kind of catch you can find in the world, even industrial killing of animals in factories doesn't come better out than this. And then she asks, seems to indicate that we don't know what kind of species we are hunting at. I can assure her that we never, a whaler will never miss what kind of species he is trying to hunt. And he will never, never, ever shoot another animal than the one that he is allowed to catch on. So these are two problems that is not a problem at all as we conduct the whaling trade. And we, of course, inspect this, control this, and we punish people who don't comply with the rules and regulations.
The other point, Chris, that the caller made was... at this point, I'm sure there are a lot of listeners who, touched by your comments, who say we want to mobilize. How would you answer Fiona's point?
Well, I first of all, I want to thank Fiona very much for her passion on this subject. Gandhi said that one can judge a country by the way it treats its animals. It's unconscionable to me that we would even contemplate killing such extraordinary animals any more than we would think about killing people. We need to act. We need to write to the president. We need to write to Japan. We need to write to Norway. Tell them how we feel. Tell them we're going to boycott, not buy their products, not visit their countries until they stop commercial whaling.
Let's turn to Dana in Orleans, Massachusetts. Dana, welcome.
Oh, thank you, and thank you for taking my call. And right on, Fiona. I don't know you, but right on.
Sorry, we're going to have to turn to Tony in St. Louis, Missouri. Thank you for calling, Tony.
Good day. Question. Should creatures who have brains the size of man's or larger have special consideration in man's legal codes? Thank you.
Fred?
I remember asking Roger Payne one time, and Roger might remember this. We were down on a beach trying to save gray whales from losing their pristine breeding grounds with the Mitsubishi Corporation, a campaign which we won, thank God. And I remember asking Roger, how intelligent are whales? And he said, the first thing you have to do is not think of them like apes, because we have a sort of anthropomorphic way that we define intelligence. He said, whales can see, feel, and perceive across enormous distances. They live in a very different environment. They're adapted to a different environment. Are they special? Absolutely they are. They've been on the earth for millions of years. They're highly diversified, and I think that they do deserve special status. If gorillas do and elephants do, certainly whales should as well.
I'm Steve Roberts, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. We have time for one or two more callers. Jennifer in southeastern Ohio.
Oh, you know what? All of your listeners need to go buy or rent Whale Dreamers. It was all these people that came down and called in the whales. And this one lady was Inuit, and she went back, and the Inuit were killing whales, and she cried. She got arrested by the FBI. No, it's a marvelous movie. Oh, this is such a great show. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. We have a caller also who has emailed us from Durham, North Carolina. And this is for Commissioner Klepsvig. Putting aside the question of whether whales are special or sentient beings, doesn't whale meat have high percentages of mercury and other toxins that would make it unsafe for humans to eat? Commissioner Klepsvig, talk about the role of whale meat in the Norwegian diet, and is the health issue a concern?
No, it's not a concern at all, and this is one of the most controlled meat products you can get in shops today. And some try to also, again, in this connection, give the impression and create the impression that the whale meat is very dangerous to eat. That's not the case. When it comes to people who take this and buy this stuff, they can be guaranteed that this has been through the same quality controls and as any other product in the shop.
One of the things that I read was that in Japan, a lot of this whale meat goes unsold. Fred, that this is more a question of trying to preserve a legal or even a political right, but that the appetite for whale meat has plunged in Japan, and it's a lot of this harvest goes unsold. Is that correct?
It's absolutely correct. In fact, this is an archaic dying industry, and we're throwing a 10-year lifeline to it. Japan has 3,000 tons of frozen meat that hasn't been consumed. 3,000 tons. It gives you an idea of just how absurd this really is. It's just it's not it's not a, it's a hunt looking for a market that really Really,
so why does it persist? Is it really because of these questions of sovereignty and politics? And we're not unfamiliar in this country of political lobbies protecting certain industries. Is that part of what's happening?
It certainly is. I mean, there's a very special high-level group of people protecting this whaling in Japan. And, in fact, their outlook as an island nation has always been they do not want to be denied access to raw materials, especially marine materials, because they're so dependent on it for their diet. So,
and Norway, and Commissioner Klepsvik was making a similar point about Norway's dependence on raw materials, too.
Well, sure. I mean, look at the United States. I mean, I happen to live on Cape Cod, and 150 years ago, it was the whaling center of the universe, and today it's one of the whale watching centers. The cultural aspect of this thing is we're all big boys and girls here. You know, economies go out and change. And hopefully, when President Obama really sees this, he will decide not to be the first president of the United States that's going to come along and break this moratorium. I'm hopeful and very confident that he will.
Final word, Chris, but quickly.
If commercial whaling is allowed to resume, other species such as sharks will become even more vulnerable because permission will have been given that the sea is anyone supplanted. Japan will even more aggressively go after tunas for sushi and sharks for their fins.
That's going to have to be the final word from Chris Palmer, author of the new book, Shooting the Wild. Thanks also to Fred O'Regan, President and CEO of the International Fund for Animal Welfare, and Karsten Klepsvik, the Norwegian Commissioner to the International Whaling Commission, joined us by phone from Oslo, and to Monica Medina, U.S. Commissioner for International Whaling, who was on the show earlier. I'm Steve Roberts, sitting in today for Diane. She's going to be back tomorrow. And thank you so much for spending this hour with us.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information.